Hey, everybody, and welcome back to episode 10 of The Overlay, a poker podcast, brought to you by CCG Poker Radio. That's my professional radio voice.
Sounds great, actually. It's not bad, I couldn't even tell if you're recording or not.
I think if this whole, like, you know, COVID thing doesn't blow over anytime soon, I could maybe get a job as, like, a voice actor.
I think I agree.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good. Well, thank you for listening again. We're going to do some overlay shout-outs before the episode, or really right now, to kind of get people used to hearing about it. Last week, we talked about our sponsors for the first time. It only took us 9 episodes to say thank you and mention them. I'm not going to mention them now. But we are going to mention is it is a great help to the podcast and to us here at The Overlay if you could subscribe and review our podcast on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. I think most people listen to us on Apple Podcasts, and it's super easy. You can give us a 5-star review. If you don't want to give us a 5-star review, then just don't review us.
Right, it's either 5-star or
five or nothing. Like, literally, options. We don't want like a 4-star review. If you
do half stars?
I think in all honesty, though, if anybody who's made it 10 episodes in, they're probably like, yeah, this is a 5-star podcast for sure.
I agree.
Nobody's going to listen to this if you thought it was a 3-star podcast.
I mean, I haven't listened to any podcast for 10 episodes.
So I was looking on just super fast, odd story about reviews. A guy left a review for CCG, and he gave it 3 stars.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's middle of the road. I always find review sites to be kind of odd because it's like you either get 1 or 5, and the people that leave 5s are like diehard fans that want to, like, scream from the rooftops at how great your company is, or it's a 1-star review because the guy had a bad experience and he wants to just kind of get the last word in by leaving a 1-star review. So I always take reviews as very odd, but you don't always get like a lot of 3-star reviews. I think that's the least likely number that somebody will leave. So anyways, the guy leaves a 3-star review and he was like, great place. However, locals or regs and dealers seem to be talking a lot about getting dealt good hands, maybe some cheating going on. Watch these guys. Why in God's green earth would you leave a 3-star review for a place that you thought was cheating? Like, right?
That's agreed.
Goofy as
That's
all
really goofy.
Hell. So, 2 things today, folks. Please subscribe and review, like, whatever the case may be, and whatever app that you're listening to, Apple Podcasts or Spotify are our 2 number 1 platforms. Thank you for listening as always. Please also consider, if you've been to either CCG or Paramount down in Texas, to leave us a review on Google there as well. Google, Facebook, whatever the case may be. Right now, the Overlay only has a Twitter handle, and it's @TheOverlay_pod. We're getting some more followers on there, and we're growing this organically. We're not paying for anything, so by all means, if you could do that, that would be great. And if not, enjoy the show. What are we going to talk about today, Brandon?
Today's episode, Poker Culture 101.
Yeah, Poker Culture 101.
We're diving into the ins and outs of the poker world, how it differs from
The regular world.
Because there is quite a difference between the poker world and the regular world.
Oh, yeah. Once you walk into a poker room in general, if it's a home game, if it's a charity event, big or small charity events, because sometimes you go to like little rinky-dink charity events that are like on kitchen tables, you're playing with bicycle chips, and there's still like that kind of like persona that it gives off, and there's just certain things about a poker room that people don't always realize. And if you've never played or ever been in one, it's very different in general, just the culture and the way things are. It's not as easy to know kind of what's going on either, because like if you like, I'm trying to think of like something that's like a parallel, like if I go to the community center and I want to play basketball, because you do that, right? You play basketball at your community center. I mean, you don't right now, right? But In the past, you have.
Yep.
Right? Like, you walk in, you can instantly see, like, which guys are legit players, which guys are just scrubs, which guys are just there because they're hiding from...
Right, they're posing on the sideline.
Right, like, just trying to get an Instagram pic. Yeah.
Right.
Like, you can always tell, at least within the first 30 seconds of walking in, kind of who the players are, what's going on, and what game you're probably going to feel most comfortable at by your own skill set, right?
Yep.
Although, with poker... One, you don't really get to choose your own spot. You get to choose the game you play, but if there's 5-1-3 games going or 1-2 games or whatever the game you're playing, it's not like you get to be like, I want that table right there.
Like, right. Maybe eventually you can get over there, but yeah, you can't walk in and be like, I want that
seat. I want that seat right there. Although that happens a lot at CCG. But anyways, so yeah, poker culture. We're going to go over a couple of topics today, and I'm sure we're going to hop all over the place in our normal hodgepodge, wing it kind of way. Somebody asked us today, hey, you guys going to have like a script or an outline of what you're going to talk about? And my answer was unequivocally, no.
We never
have any idea what we're going to talk about. This is all frontline, essential work that we're doing right here.
I see what you did there. That was nice vocabulary.
Nice. Throwing it out there. Poker culture in general. We wanted to a couple of different topics. We want to talk about the different types of players. So like the stereotypes of players. Poker language in itself, because poker definitely has its own language. And then kind of the unwritten rules or laws that govern the poker world that not everybody knows, especially new players that are just breaking into live poker. You know, they've been playing poker with their friends and at home, and now they want to kind of venture out to whatever game that they're going to make it to. So where do you want to start, Brando?
I want to start with the stereotypes, because that's my favorite.
Stereotypes. Rip it. How many stereotypes are there?
I mean, there's tons. Can we just like, is this like full, like I can just go into my stereotypes and not sound like an asshole? Like,
yeah, this like, is like what, this
what's
is like
my,
yeah, this is not
what's my range of freedom here.
I think it's pretty big. I think this is not about like a specific person. Like we can give one shout out to one type of player. Pat is a regular at CCG. He's a regular at the Horseshoe. He is full blown and has fully embraced the fact that he is just a nit.
Yep.
He's okay with it.
He embraces it. He loves it, and he yeah.
If there was a nit pride parade, he would go. He would probably be the grand marshal of the Knit Day Parade.
Yep. And he'd have a little army with him, too.
There's tons of knits out there.
I won't say names, but...
Friggin' knits.
So I my generalizations are old guys are tight, and if they're not tight, they're bad.
Okay.
So there's that. That's my view. I'm like, oh, this old guy is either rock solid, and the tight old guys are, like, good and tough to play against. I'm not, like...
Oh, they're crusty, like crusty veterans is what I always refer to.
But like,
to
if you look, at like an HPT main event 1600 final table, there's always two old guys.
Yeah,
rock solid 65 year old. I mean,
so that type of player,
ABC poker player.
Yeah, he's just playing straight 2000 like six poker.
Yeah,
he's not playing range versus range. He knows what he's doing. Yeah. He's playing very
textbook. He's not going to get out of line with ace four suited.
Right.
He's going to have ace king and kings and aces. And if he gets cooler at aces versus kings, that's how he's probably going to get out of the tournament.
Correct. And you could very easily, when that man three bets and you've got ace queen, it's like a no brainer. Like you just insta fold.
Correct. And then if the old guy isn't so tight, then I feel like usually they're kind of bad because they don't have like the characteristics of the tight old guy. And they're trying to be like the young aggressive kid a little too much, where they're kind of in over their head. So that's where I kind of put them in like the middle ground of just like, they don't really know what they're doing.
And what would that be called?
Well, that's just
like
fish.
A fish, right?
A fish, yeah.
So old guys either go into one of two categories. They're either crusty veterans that are good, rock solid players you should respect when they make a raise, and you can probably bluff them a little bit more because you're able to, if you're playing that ace four goofy range, that you could get them off of a hand, right?
Yep.
Or it's the complete 180 degree opposite.
Yep, that's the opposite.
The complete opposite side of the coin is just full blown fish. Guy has no idea what the hell he's doing. He's just punting money around, throwing it in, and hoping to see what happens. There's no real middle ground.
Fish is our first vocabulary word of the day.
Well, let's not go too crazy with jumping around.
Yeah, I know. I was just throwing that little hint there.
So then, go ahead.
I just want to rattle through some stereotypes here. If you got like a 25-year-old kid with a beard and glasses who's listening to Spotify,
okay,
I'm gonna put him as like solid, good, creative. Gonna stay away from him until he shows me something different. I'm gonna like try and not get into pots with that kid.
Okay.
They just have like a pro-y persona about them that, you know, not like intimidates you, but like makes you aware of them very quickly. Like I said in the last podcast, you want to put on a show and be something different. I want to try to be the pro that acts like a fish. I want to be the nit that tries to act loose. I don't want to pull the pat and just embrace the nittiness, or be the pro that like embraces the pro-iness, if that makes, does that make sense?
I mean, sure.
Yeah. Then, yeah. So that's another stereotype. So first I label the old guys and I try and figure them out. Then I label the young kids and try and figure them out. Then you have like the kind of spacey, don't really know what they're doing. They don't look comfortable in their chair. You can kind of tell they're looking around, or, you know, they're playing almost every hand. They're talking to their buddies on the rail. Those are kind of like the spots in the game, maybe, where I'm going to be like, all right, well, this kid is coming here to have fun, entertaining. I'm going to maybe zero in on him. So I'm going to three bet that kid a lot more than I'm going to three bet the kid with the glasses and the beard that's 25.
And how many times are you three betting the old crusty veteran?
With aces.
Yeah. Your range there is pretty small.
So then I move over to the females, which
be careful here. It's 2020. Let's not get crazy.
But they are they're the biggest wild cards.
Ah.
Because I feel like they get to play the female card. Like, they get to have the most. It's tough to make a generalization or a stereotype about them. Because, like, you want to think that they're tight and that they play good and solid and they're conservative and, you know, all these stereotypes of a female poker player. But then they could just be one-upping you and playing that card, and they're really just bluffing the shit out of you every hand, and you really have no idea.
So women actually have a little bit of an advantage, because exactly what you said earlier, you want to be a tight player who gets perceived as a loose player, whereas women kind of do the exact opposite. They are perceived as tight players, but women can play far looser. Good Lord, that seems wrong to say, but I like it.
Yes.
Women can play, you know, a much wider range and get through a lot of different stuff because of the fact that most guys will just immediately stereotype women and say, all right, they're just tight, not even tight aggressive, just kind of tight, you know, is that nitty players?
Good.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't know, like, for example, we were going to talk about, like, Jill, she was on one of our CCG final tables of, like, I think the Valentine's Day Bounty Massacre or one of those. And somebody came up to me and was like, man, Jill just plays so tight. I'm like, are you guys crazy? Like, she just wants you to think that. Like, I didn't say that, but I was just like,
right.
She is not as anywhere near as tight as you think that she would be. Like, I've seen Jill just, like, snap call it off with ace four offsuit. She's probably right. But, like, you know, these are just things uncharacteristic of somebody that when somebody says, oh, she plays so tight. I mean, Pat looks down at ace four offsuit and he just mucks it without even, like, hesitating.
She can very much play that exact scenario that you talk about. You want people to think you're tight and that way you can play loose and exploit it. Or the opposite, you know, have people think you're very loose and then you could tighten it up, the Jerry Yang effect. And then you got the Jill effect. The Jill effect is when they think you're tight and you can loosen up and win more pots, or the Jerry effect and they think you're incredibly loose and when you've got really good hands, you get paid off because of the fact that they just always put you on garbage.
Yep.
Right. It's the Jerry Yang effect versus the Jill event. Jill
is. Do you have any other stereotypes? Those are my main ones. I got the females, the old guys, the pro-y looking guys, and the fishy looking guys.
I mean, I think that kind of sums up like the normal stereotypes. I mean, there's different variations of each and every one of those, and varying degrees of all of them. But I mean, yeah, if you sit down at a table, you're very much always going to find one or two old guys, one lady. I was going to throw in like the drunk guy, you know, like your drunk or high guy that's just going to be there, you know, and. Either he's pretending to just play that off or not, you know, whatever the case may be.
That is true. The drunk guy
normally comes out later. Thing. You know, he's not normally like a mid-morning kind of drunk guy. Otherwise, unless you're in Vegas, in which case you could get the drunk guy earlier. But
he's the 9 p.m. to till they stop serving alcohol, 2:45 kind of guy.
Yeah.
And then he either goes home with whatever money he's got left because he's wasted. Or he lost it all and he's going home, bro.
But I think
those guys are fun to play with.
They absolutely are. They make the game more exciting. And there's different ways that other players can affect the game that makes it better, makes it more fun, makes it a lot less fun. I mean, and that's what people don't always understand about a poker game is that it's you can't have a poker game. And I know I say this a lot. You can't have a poker game that is all fish. You can't have a poker game that are all nits. You can't have a poker game that's all pro sharks out there. Like, you got to get a good mix of everything. You need a couple of tight guys to keep the loose aggressive guys in line. You also need some loose aggressive guys to drive the game. Otherwise, every orbit, it's, you know, muck, small blind, big blind, chop. Muck, small blind, big blind, chop, you know?
Right, and that's not a game that everybody enjoys it.
No, and if that happens when I'm playing, if I see one muck all the way to the small big blind and they chop it up, like, I'm like, all right, that's not happening for at least another hour. I don't care what happens. Like, my instantly my radar goes off. That's one thing I find is that I'm just going to make sure we drive this game to get bigger. And my goal is always to not run out of money before I can catch that really big hand, whatever it is. Right. Either I've got a really good hand and I get paid off, or I get that, you know, flush draw, straight draw, whatever the case is, and I drill it on the river and get paid off big because I know the other guy's got that big hand, aces or kings or a set or something along those lines. So at least that's what I'm on.
Oh, I got one more. I got one more really quick one. Cool. It's borderline here, but, you know, I think that it's actually kind of prevalent in the poker world. Mm-hmm. You got, like, the drug dealers.
The drug dealers.
You got the guys that got three cell phones in front of them. They got bling all over the place.
Okay.
They are hilariously fun to play with because they just don't care about money.
They're just,
like, this is their
burning money left and right.
They are buying in with tens, and they don't care. And they got three cell phones, and they're FaceTiming with their females, and they got rings on, tattoos. I mean, you know, it's endless, you know. But it's just they go along with the drunk guys. They drive the game. They're going to get it in. They're going to run it once.
And total
whatever happens.
Yeah, the total disrespect or the total just carefree attitude of money in general. Like, I do not care about this.
At the poker table.
This is nothing.
Uh-huh.
Wow, those guys are fun. If you can find those a game with that fun. Guy, you definitely right. want to
one
see
one or two it. Of those guys in a game. I don't care how many nits there are. It's going to be fun.
Well, and that's the times that you get, like, other people there texting out and be like, dude, such and such here is, like, get over here now. Like, you got to get in on some of this action because it's so good.
Yes.
It's good.
Yep. All right. So that's generalization.
Kind of basic types of players, stereotypes from each type of player, and kind of how you should, maybe not how to play them, but just how to identify them, right? I think that's...
Right, and obviously all people within the stereotypes are going to vary. Like, a stereotype is a stereotype for a reason. It's not true, like, across all
right.
forms. You know, every old guy isn't tight, and every female isn't good and good at being perceived at one way or the other, and every drug dealer isn't bad, and but I mean, just in general, ways to label people out. Just so if you know you got seven guys on Spotify with glasses and a beard, they're 25. Maybe get a table change.
Yeah, playing Chinese poker on their phone.
Correct.
Yeah, that's like a first. If I sit down, the guy next to me's got, you know, Chinese poker going up on his phone, like a couple of different, you know, apps running, like, that guy instantly give him a little bit more respect, give him a little bit wide berth, be like, all right, I'm going to make sure if I get involved in a hand that I can do so accordingly. It's kind of like going into the Wild West and, you know, you don't want to get into a gunfight with a gunslinger. Like, you instantly like, all right, that's a guy I got to be afraid of. That guy should stay away from. That guy could kick his ass. That guy, I don't know what the hell he's doing, so I should be careful.
Exactly true.
Like, you got to think of every poker table like you're walking into that bar in the Old West, like the little swinging doors pop open, everybody looks up at you. They're instantly trying to get the idea of who you are and what kind of player are you, and you should be doing the same for them. It's kind of like the whole rounders. If you haven't spotted the sucker at the table within the first half hour, you are the sucker.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never spotted a sucker.
So a lot of truth to that.
I've never spotted a sucker at a table ever.
Well,
they never make it that long.
I won't comment on that.
We'll comment on that one. All right, so poker culture, besides stereotypes and the, just the different types of players, the other thing we wanted to kind of key on today is language. Poker language. Poker has its own language.
Yes.
And you are very articulate in general.
Well, you know, it's... You know, when you walk in a poker room, you're going to hear words like fish and whale and bad beat and set mining and range. And, like, all these words where if you were in the real world and the guy's like, man, I mean, what's my perceived rating? It's your perceived range. Somebody's going to look at you like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Or like, this dude's a fish or needling or, you know, all
needle
these,
is
like,
a good
words.
One. Cause I find that when I hang out with my non-poker player friends, I'm like, dude, nice needle. And the guy would be like, what does that mean? You know,
Scott Van Pelt last night said the word needle on a Sports Center. I was like, all right, this guy's in the gambling.
This guy knows. He knows.
This guy, he knows. Yeah, so you're going to just see a lot of different terminology that you wouldn't see at the barber or anywhere else. And
like talking about
why it's
like talking about playing on the bubble.
Yep.
Like, oh, I bubbled that tournament. Like, what?
So you want to go through a couple of these? Can we, I think the big one is set versus trips.
Well, something we talked about when we were like, what are we going to talk about today? And I was like,
think that we're winging it.
Yeah. Things that I think poker players use a lot and use it incorrectly. Nothing sends me on tilt even harder, which again, it's stuff that I'll say to like my wife, like I am on massive tilt right now. She's like, I don't even know what that means. And I've tried to explain what tilt means, which is fine. I don't think we need to explain what tilt is here on a poker podcast. But, you know, the one thing that I think that maybe it's a good and bad thing, and it actually kind of leads us into other topics about unwritten rules and laws. So we'll kind of jumble these together, is that, you know, if you've got ace five in your hand and the flop comes 5-5-6, you don't have a set of fives. You have trip fives.
Yep.
Nothing sends me on tilt more when a guy's like, oh, I lost with a set of fives. I was like, oh, you know what happened? I had ace five and the flop came 5-5-X. I'm just like, yeah, okay. Anytime you want to play, I'd be happy to join your game.
You can spot a fish in that game.
Yeah, that guy is a full-blown, he is out of water. He should be flopping around next to the table. He is such a fish, because I cannot imagine anybody saying that. And everybody does it occasionally where they'll just say it incorrectly, or maybe they use the term differently because they want people to think that they had pocket fives and a five hit the board. And then that's, you know, that's a set. And
because
you know,
sets are way, way, way stronger than trips.
For sure.
I mean, they aren't even the same. That's why they're different. They're correct. Not even in the same category.
Which is why it's so aggravating to hear somebody tell a poker story or a bad beat story, and then they talk about the fact that it's, oh, I had, you know, trips. Like, bro, what are you even doing in the hand with ace five? And then you're mad about it. That's not a bad beat. Like, you didn't get a bad beat. You just played poorly, got lucky in the flop, and then now you're mad because you lost, and they catch up. Which I literally
like
just...
Like, when you flop trips, you're getting action from better trips and better full houses.
Correct. Because the guy with 5-6 that just... Right.
Got 5-6.
The guy that just... The guy with 5-X on a 5-5-X flop, your ace 5 gets a lot smaller at that point. That means you're basically just going to lose the max.
Correct. And this is speaking in PLO terms, guys. Probably.
Yeah,
I mean, ace 5 and Hold'em is pretty...
More so pretty than, yeah, Hold'em, nutty.
But yeah,
you got trips in PLO, you can fold. Get rid of them.
Easily.
Because there's a very good chance that guy's got a set. Right. And your trips
are drawing
dead.
Right. So a set is when you got a pocket pair and you flop a set, which is extremely stronger than flopping trips.
Now, we could also talk about the fact that we also like to talk about full houses.
Uh-huh.
And a full boat. But then there's also different types of boats you can have. Like, Brandon, what can you have?
You can have a canoe.
Canoe is what?
A canoe would be like if the board is 4-5-5-9, and you have 4-5 or 5-9.
Right. That's a canoe. It's the smallest boat possible.
Right. What's the term for the nut boat?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Maybe it's just canoe. Like, I remember we had a conversation where we had like given them different names, like a yacht or something.
Yeah, it might be a yacht. Yeah.
But anyways, canoe is another one.
Canoe is when you have the worst boat.
Right. You're just screwed. You're going to lose more money on that hand than anything else. And how often have you folded a canoe when there's like, you know, whatever. You're just convinced that you cannot be, you're the third guy to call in a hand. It's a bot size bet. You're like, I cannot be good here with 4-5 with a flop, you know, with a board of 4-5-5-9 jack, and just be like, I can't be good. Like somebody's got jack five, somebody's got a set of nines, somebody's got a set of jacks. Like, it's just, I cannot possibly be good here in any way, shape, or form. You fold, and then the one guy's like, I was bluffing. I only got a five. Fives are good, you know?
Yeah.
And the guy wins. You talk yourself out of a call because you're like, I can't get involved in a three-way pot, which, again...
That's like the worst, one of those worst hands to be in is when, like, you're third to act and the first guy's bluffing, and then the second guy knows that the first guy's bluffing.
And he calls.
So he calls lighter than he normally should. And then you get into a spot where it's like, man, I can't be good here.
Correct. You talk yourself out of it. And the guy's just like, in all fairness, the guy in the middle of that hand's like, well, I've never been raised by this guy over here. So he's obviously not a super strong hand. Like, I could very much get away with a bet or a raise or something along those lines and, you know, be fine with it. So it's good knowing your position.
Yeah. What other vocab words? Obviously, tilt. You know, fish, whale. I like those two. Those
I like are, a whale. I like too when people
like
use
guppy. They call like guppies. They're like little fish.
Little baby fish. I like when people use poker fish. Terms in real life with non-poker players. Like somebody with Alex Ice Hayes was telling me a story. He's like, yeah, my wife was just going on and on about this story, and I was super losing interest. He's like, halfway through a story, I just yelled clock. And she like stumbled and she's like, what? And he's like, never mind. Keep going.
And it's funny because to a person in the poker world, that's hilarious.
It's great. But anybody else, you're just like, why would you yell clock in the middle of my story? It does not make sense in any way, shape, or form.
20-second side story. My favorite dealer at the Horseshoe, Mo, I'm playing Hold'em because I'm waiting for a PLO seat. The action is so slow. It's been 2 minutes, and I'm in the 9 seat, and Mo just is like, gosh, he's like, what's that thing? Like, he's just talking to me. He's like, man, what's that thing on, like, the wall that like tells time? And I was like, a clock? And he's like, clock, table 7. And like, I didn't even realize that he was trying to get me.
He was trying to bait you into doing it. Oh yeah, it's
and
great.
And I did it. I had no idea. And I was like, it's a clock. And he's like, clock, table 17. And I was just like, wow.
Oh, that's
awesome.
He's like,
seat 9, call the clock. And I'm like, yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, I just played along with
it. I'm good with it.
But pretty nice little. So then there's another one, angle. Like use the word angle.
An angle shoot, right? That's
not even that. Just like, you know, you take an angle, you use an angle. There's different angles.
Oh, I got you. You're like, using it in positive and negative terms.
Right. Just the word negative. Angle and right. All of the realm of words of angle. Somebody in the real world or, you know, the regular non poker world.
Right.
Be like, what do you mean an angle? Like, yeah, you mean like an obtuse, like 140-degree angle? I mean, no, I'm like, it's an angle. It's a sideways little view on things. Could be positive or negative. And I use that word all the time to my non-poker friends, and they're clueless.
Well, the other thing, too, is when you're telling a story and you get super deep into poker terms, which I think sometimes people do to just try to make the story sound better, because it's like, oh, I 3-bet, and then this guy 4-bet jammed all in, and then the under the gun did this, and then the cutoff did that. And, you know, it's like you can throw so many words into a story, and then the flop came out, I had this guy who would call rainbow flops banana flops.
Uh-huh.
And I still to this day, I'm like, yeah, you know, I got aces, flop comes out all banana. And the guy's like, so I have taken a poker term from my very small home game that I played in 20 years ago to, I still use that term now. I'm just going to make it a thing. When you say banana flop, that means it's one of each suit.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's banana badoogie, probably where it came from, maybe.
Oh. No, this guy was just a full-blown fish.
Oh, just banana. Yeah. It's like wet napkin.
When Paul yelled out wet napkin on the river on that PLO game that we were using the RFID table on, I literally almost lost it. It's actually one of our most popular videos on YouTube for CCG Poker TV. It's like literally, if you haven't checked it out, it's great. It's like one of the first, it's in the first 5 minutes of the video. It's like a half an hour like highlight PLO reel of like really cool hands, and it's hilarious because he gets it all in. I think he flopped a full wrap, which again, that's something that I think people use incorrectly at times. You know, the new PLO players will use a full wrap incorrectly. Anyways, he had a full wrap. He bet it, got called, drilled the turn with the nuts. There was two flush draws out there, and he literally yells as the river's coming out like, wet napkin, and because he just wanted it to be a blank, you know, nothing. And I think it really was a two. It could not have been more of a wet napkin. It was like an offsuit two, and it was just like, boom, the nuts stay, and I'm good. I scooped this big, huge pot twice.
Wet napkin is a monkey, you're looking for a face card.
Monkey,
that's
yeah.
more of a gambling term.
That's a gambling term, right? It's from Baccarat, where you want to get, you know. Yeah,
you don't want the score to change.
Correct. You want a natural 10, so you just keep it. But yeah, yell monkey, 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 monkey. I do that a lot too.
I don't think there is a 10 in Baccarat. I think 9's the best.
Yeah, I think, but if you get a face card, does it not change? I don't know.
It doesn't change. A face card's a 0.
Correct. Right? That's so what I meant. Like, it doesn't change. Yeah.
Also, a couple other ones that people misuse is like smooth call or cold call or, you know, like stuff like that, where I don't really want to get into it, but like a cold call is like you haven't acted yet and you're going cold. Like somebody raises, somebody 3-bets, you cold call. Like you're basically you're out to dry. You haven't done anything yet. Now you're just putting in multiple bets.
You're calling a 3-bet.
Right. You're calling a 3-bet, but you haven't put any chips in. Like, it's one thing to call a 3-bet if you've already raised.
Right.
Because you already got half or a third.
Or to get stuck in the middle. Right.
Correct. Yeah. And then there's smooth call, which is when you're like, there's a lot of different variations of like poker terminology that sometimes is confusing that people, you know, mix up and use incorrectly, where like, you know, an expert would be like, you know, they would correct you or call you out on it, or but it's just stuff that the general public doesn't know about. Can we go back to a full rep? 9-6-3 flop. If you got 8-7-4-5, that's the biggest rep you can have. So anybody who thinks if you got like king, queen, jack on 10-9, like, yeah, that's a good rep, but that's not a full rep.
That's what Zeus used to call a three quarter rep. I have three quarter rep.
If it's 10-9 and you have king, queen, jack, you can hit the 8 and you can hit the jack or the queen or the king. That's four outs to hit, and it's all to the nuts. So that's a good rap.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, those raps are like powerful and everything. But a full rap is two open enders intertwining with each other. So 9-6-3, you have the 8-7 open ender on top.
And the 4-5 on the bottom.
So now deuce, straight, 4, straight, 5, straight. 7 straight, 8 straight, 10 straight. Any of those in-between cards that don't pair the board between deuce and 10 all make you straights. Now, some of them aren't to the nuts, but you still, it's still right. Like the most
the outs. Most outs you can have. A full wrap of, you've got the full option here of everything we can do. Well, let's do a little bit more about kind of unwritten rules and laws of the poker world in general. Things that are either actual rules versus just like, you know, stuff that people do knowingly, and it's just bad etiquette or uncouth to not follow those rules. And obviously noobs don't always know about it. And
right, because they aren't in the culture. They haven't spent enough time in the bubble of the poker world to know these unwritten rules.
Right.
Like, if you've never watched a baseball game before, you wouldn't know that, like, a guy's not supposed to bunt to break up a no-hitter.
Oh, I always forget about that one. I mean,
it's
I'm not...
an unwritten rule.
I mean, I don't ever think of bunting, so I guess that's... You're just
a home run hitter. Huh?
I'm swinging for the fences every time.
So I think the most common and popular and universal unwritten rule is like checking it down deep in a tournament when a player's all in three-way
action. Yeah. So if it's a guy's all in, you got two callers. Those two callers are not supposed to bet into one another to try to get the other one. You want to give the guy to get knocked out of the tournament the best odds to get knocked out of the tournament,
which would be facing four cards on the river instead of two
if you're playing, or eight if you're playing a PLO tournament. But
yes,
the whole point of that is it's an unwritten rule of poker. However, it is in direct defiance of the rules of poker. It's like my most funny rule because everybody does it. It's, you are going to get, I don't want to say you're going to get shit for it, but you're definitely going to get a look or see. So like, why would you bet that? We could have knocked him out. Like, people are going to say it. Like, they're literally going, why didn't you collude with me to get this guy out of the tournament? Why would you try to do what you're actually supposed to do and protect the field? And it's like such a weird kind of like, it's
like, why didn't,
because it's cheating. It's 100% it's cheating. Yes?
Yes. Yes. I mean, yeah.
By definition of the rules, it is 100% cheating. To check it down, and then the only time that it's okay to bet into the other player, at least by like the unwritten rules, is if like you turn the nuts, you can bet it, and then if the other guy's out, be like, I got the nuts, you know?
Right, or something super strong where the pot, if the pot is meaningful to your chip stack, you know, like if the guy rips 9 big blinds and you and the other person call, there's a 27 big blind pot. If you only got 15 big blinds left or something like that, where this is a major hand for you and you turn two pair or you turn something that you need to protect from a lot of draws or whatever, I mean, it's pretty acceptable to rip it in there, because just as much as you want to give the you want to give the third player who's in the side pot with you the option to beat the guy who's all in. You need that pot just as much as the all in guy needs the pot.
Right.
So like you still have like your own right to fight for it. But in general, you do not want to bluff into a dry side pot to gain zero extra chips, then flip over ace high and have the guy all in win with the pair of twos.
Correct.
And you got the guy fold a pair
that,
of sixes.
It's a rule that people are maybe not unaware of or uneducated on. It's not to the extent of that you shouldn't bet ever. It's the idea of you should
of
never bluff.
Picking your spots.
You should never semi-bluff. You should be betting if you have a hand. If you've got king jack and the flop comes down king 4-6, and you bet your king and roll over king jack, like that's maybe middle grounds, like borderline. Like you might get a guy like, dude, why would you bet there? But you've got a hand that's in that instance that you just talked about. You know, you've got 15 big blinds left. There's 27 big blinds in the pot. Like, I need that pot. Like, I need it. I need to ladder up. There's another term for you. I need to, you know, build this chip stack. And that's perfectly okay, I think, even though some people might say it's borderline. Now, you know, I think the worst case scenario there that, again, people are going to get mad at you about, probably the whole table, even the guy who's all in. Like, if you bluff and bluff another guy off of a hand and then turn out that you bluffed him off of the winning hand and this guy stays in the tournament, the rest of the field is going to be mad at you. And this actually kind of came up, and I won't say exact, but it's the exact same thing happened. It was like two buddies were in a tournament, and they're down to like six players left in the tournament, and the third guy goes all in, the two buddies call. And again, they're still playing against each other, but like they're friendly. I won't say they're slow playing or doing anything weird, but that exact scenario happened where, like, I can't remember. Do you remember exactly how it broke down? Like, was one of the buddies was all in, and then the other buddy bluffed the other guy out, and then he, like, accused him of punting chips back to the original. You know what I'm talking about here?
Yeah, I don't remember what happened. I thought the kid, like, said he had quads or something.
Oh, that's even worse.
He like said he flopped quads.
We'll save that one for a rules episode. If you can actually say I have quads and get somebody to fold and then roll over a bluff, things of that nature. But I think one of the biggest unwritten rules of poker, especially really just tournament poker, is that if you're three-way action all in, the two guys who still have the side action are really not betting into each other. They're going to check it down unless it's very few occasions they're going to be betting, and you should never at any point be bluffing into the other player because there's just no value in it, right?
Especially, when this is the whole thing of why people are going to get mad at you in addition, because there's no benefit for you to get the guy to fold when you have seven high, when you still have to beat the other guy for
correct.
The same amount
it's
of
just
chips.
Stupid.
There's no side pot. Yeah, there's no, all you're doing is net losing for the whole entire table, including yourself. The only guy you're benefiting is your opponent, who will just be like, thanks, man. I can't believe I'm still in the tournament because of you. You know, like, I can't believe, like, just like,
it's
mind-blowing.
It's a teeter-totter of rules here because it's like you should be protecting the field, but then you're protecting the field by checking it down. And if you bluff into it, then you're no longer protecting the field. You're kind of benefiting the guy who's, because you're not even benefiting yourself. You're benefiting the other player in the hand.
But at the same time, you still want to win the pot. And the best way to win the pot is to only beat two cards and not four cards. So that's why it's so unwritten and there's so many different variations of when it's acceptable to the other eight people for you to bet and when it's not acceptable, that like you're going to find people in people's lines are different where, you know, if it's king 6-3, some people are like, dude, king jack, like this is hold'em. Like I got top pair, good kicker. Like I'm not checking this thing down.
Right.
Like I'm getting you out of there with ace queen. So you don't turn an ace
correct.
And win this thing. And then another guy's just like, dude, like, come on, what are you doing here? Like if you have a set of kings, like sure, a set of sixes, and so everyone's line is a little bit different. So everyone's
of where they think it's acceptable to bet versus your value of what you're going to get by getting the other guy out does not, you know, benefit the rest of the tournament. All right. Well, we've spent plenty of time on this one. I almost feel like this could be a rules whole episode.
It is.
On...
It's so weird. There's so many different outcomes.
What are some other unwritten rules / laws of the poker room that are not actual rules, but things that you just don't do?
So this one, and so the other one was the most common. This is the one that's most common for you to get like ousted in the poker world for. Like if you are needling / tapping the glass mm-hmm. on the fish, like that is something that is going to upset everyone else at the table, or at least any other good player at the table.
Correct.
Like you do not want to like yell or make the fish feel unwanted or make the fish feel bad or that they don't want to be there or that they should just go home. Like, these are all bad. Do not complain when the fish sticks in with a 4-high flush draw and you have top set and he gets there. Like, say nice hand, even if it's in your condescending way or whatever. Or
you're allowed a little needle. You're allowed a little bit. You're allowed to be like, oh, nice hand. Whatever. Because nobody ever means it when they say nice hand.
Yep. But for you to just put the guy on blast and embarrass him and make him feel uncomfortable is like just so negative EV.
It's the worst thing you can do.
It is the worst thing.
That's another funny term, not a funny term, but a term that I use in everyday life that people always are like, what? Negative EV, positive EV, you know? It's a weird thing that you can say to other, that your non-poker player friends. How many people out there have non-poker player friends too?
I mean, I have like 2.
Yeah. Well, I have golf buddies and they gamble. So like we can use gambling terms, but like, like when I try to tell a poker story, like when I was, my dad's like, oh, Kenny did really well at the WSOP and got second place in a tournament for like 14K and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, tell us about it. And I like try to like tell them about the tournament. Well, like there's re-entries and there was actually only 80 players in the tournament, but there was 160 people worth of money in there. Like they were very confused as to how it goes and that there's like strategy. Well, isn't it all luck? And it's funny to talk and try
laddering
to
ICM. Correct. There's just unlimited things
that you can talk about in the poker world that in our world makes perfect sense to say these things. I had positive EVs, so I 3-bet this under the gun because blah, 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 and this was happening, and his range, perceived range, and they're just like, whoa, no idea.
7 bigs and ICM and chip leader, and yeah, it's just, and we use these just part of our regular vocabulary.
Regular vocabulary,
talking to a poker audience, we can do that, and you guys are all understanding, but like, take this out of our bubble, and like, it really is a bubble that we're in, and we're in a poker podcast talking about poker, so we're clearly going to use the terminology,
right?
But in general, you know, 99% of the world thinks we're crazy.
Yeah, and it's funny because like people will, you know, like when the charity workers, you're trying to explain to them like poker has its own language. They're the best because like 9 times out of 10, the volunteers that are working the charity poker events, like they're not poker players, or they're kitchen table poker players, right? They're not like hardcore. In the poker world, they know what the heck you're talking about. So when people are saying words like, oh, what's the rake? What's this? What's the buy-in? What's the starting stack? How's this? And they just look at it like, I have no idea. Here's 300.
Like even something as simple as the blinds.
Right. What's the levels?
What's that timer over
right.
there?
Right. That's up? Always a funny one. And then I have to explain to them how the blinds go up. Wait, there's blinds? They go up all the time? Some people can't see? Well, no, they can all see. It's just the blinds of the tournament, you know? Oh, they want to play a cash game? No, they don't. Nope. And then a guy will be like, all right, give me 300. I want 200 in red, 50 in white, and 50 in green.
And nickels. They use nickels.
Oh, nickels is a good one, too. But they'll use colors red, green, black, and they have no idea what those are either. My other favorite thing is, and it's happened, and I'm not putting anybody on blast or making fun of anyone. We have all done this in our early poker careers, which I think will track back to what the last unwritten rule that we just talked about is. My favorite thing is when a guy plays in the early bird, and he runs up his, you know, what do you start with the early bird? Like 4K in chips?
5K
in chips. He like gets an early double up or triple up. He's got like 15K in chips. And he brings his tournament chips up to the bank. And it's like, I'd like to cash these in. It's always like, sir, those absolutely have no value whatsoever. Go back to the tournament.
Or when they take the tournament chips with them on break.
Yes, that's an always. Players, please, if you have new people in, give them a couple of insights. One of them being when you're playing in a tournament, do not take your tournament chips with you when you leave the table, because it's something that nobody ever listens to. And it's every tournament director always says, any concealed chips are dead chips. And nobody's like, what the hell is a concealed chip? Concealed chip means if you put your chips in your pocket and you take them with you on break to go to the bathroom and you come back in, one, that's disgusting. And two, theoretically, you should lose those chips. Now, it's always like the guy gives you a warning, like, okay, in the future, don't do that. Or they want to put them in their hat and then like...
Well, the problem is the only people that are doing it are the people that have never been there before and don't understand. So you're inclined to give them a little bit of a break in the tournament.
Poker players out there, we need new blood. If we do not get new players in the game dies. Games like horse race betting, and like bingo, those players are dying off and new players are not feeding the games, right? At some point in the next 100 years, and that's a really long line to give this, bingo will be gone and horse racing will be gone, because most people, younger people, even me at 40, like, I don't play bingo. I have no inclination to play bingo. Like, we're never going to go and try to play like night bingo or any of the, like the cool like blacklight bingo that they play. Like, it's just, it's very difficult. If we run off all of the noobs, they'll never turn it, that money never comes into the game. It never feeds the players. And that's what you need. You need some of those players in this ecosystem to make the games better. And when pros are running off new players because they make them feel bad for doing something stupid, like, it's really bad. Like, it would be like playing
just
golf.
Negative EV.
Right.
That guy might lose 100,000 to the poker community.
Correct.
And I mean, this is just generalization, but the guy might really enjoy himself and come every single Friday night and lose $600 because he has the money.
Right.
And have a blast and every single Saturday.
You want 50 of those guys in your poker room, because if you have 50 of those guys in your poker room, your room is thriving and everybody's making money. Everybody.
Right. And it's the pro's responsibility to make them feel at home and like they're enjoying their company and having a good time and not tapping the glass and not aggravating the fish to where they don't want to come back. They should always want to come back. You never, like, there's never a better outcome than a fish losing $1,000, smiling and saying,
"Thanks,
see you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow." It's actually funny, and it's how I'm going to end the episode. Vinny, who moved to Vegas to be a pro, and he's still there and he's still making it. Hopefully he's doing okay. Vinny, it's shout out for you. We miss you. We love you. Stay safe out there. But Vinny told me once, and he's a regular, like, low stakes cash game player, plays, you know, 1-3, occasionally plays 2-5, right? Like a low stakes grinder. And he said to him, "My job is not a professional poker player." He's like, "My job is to entertain the fish." And I was like, whoa. Mind blown. Because if you can be a professional poker player and your number one goal is to entertain the fish, you know you're going to beat them 85 to 90% of the time that you play. And if you can have them leaving exactly what you just said, guy goes, dumps $400, two $200 buy-ins in a 1-2 game, and he
drinks
leaves there,
three beers,
and he leaves there thinking, I had the best time that I've had in a long time, and I just lost $400. Like, that guy will come back, he will feed the games, and your life will improve. It's positive EV by entertaining the fish. Never knock on the glass, never make fun of another player. It's the only time you'll ever hear me preach. Don't ever pick on a bad player. You want bad poker players in the tournament. Yeah, sometimes they're going to get you. I mean, if you're an 80% chance to win in a tournament, occasionally, 1 out of 5 times, that guy's going to win. But you need him to win those 1 out of 5 times so he will continue to come. And also, you don't want him to feel bad the other 4 times where he loses and you benefit. You want him to go home and go, "Man, I had a blast today. That was super fun.
Right.
I want to go back."
And when he bad beats you out of a $1,000 pot, do not make him feel bad for it. Let him go home a winner. They need to win sometimes or they'll never come back.
Right.
You know, like, just chalk it up to this guy's money will be back in circulation. If he's going to lose 4 times and leave with a smile on his face, don't let him, make sure he leaves with a smile on his face when he wins 1,000 on the 5th
time.
Right.
Don't make him feel bad.
Because, yeah, so it really is your responsibility to, you know,
entertain the
make
fish.
Make sure that entertain the fish. And, you know, I know we're rambling on here, but Greek John does a really good job of that.
He is the king of that.
He makes every single person have fun at the table when he's just taking their money.
Consistently. That guy wins consistently more. He's actually been accused of cheating because he's such a good player at doing exactly that. He has a knack of talking you into call when he wants a call, and he has a knack to talk you out of a call when he wants you to fold.
All while having fun, and he'll buy you pizza, and he'll buy you a beer, and when he loses 600 or 900, he'll say nice hand and go home.
Because he knows you're just
holding
on to it.
Come back the next day.
Yep.
And yeah. Yep.
He is the freaking Bob Hope of low stakes poker. Just
entertaining those. So that is the most unwritten rule of poker.
Do not tap the tank. Right. Let the fish win occasionally. Don't let them win. But when they win, don't make them feel bad. Because everybody needs new players. Because if we don't get new players in, the game will eventually die. Well,
if you're going to berate somebody, berate the pro and tell him he stinks, he's going to be broke in 6 months, and that he,
yeah.
Berate those kind of guys.
Pro versus pro fights are always the best.
They are.
right. Well,
that's it.
That's going to do it for episode 10, Poker Culture 101. Maybe we'll follow this up in a couple of months with like
201.
Yeah. 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 Do like a college thing. This is the 200 level of poker culture. Right. So
this is an introductory and then we'll get an intermediate. Right. This and we'll do advanced poker
this
culture.
This is a gen edge course. Oh, I like that. Advanced poker culture. Well, this is Poker Culture 101 beginners and how to make them have fun. Well, thanks for listening. Again, we're going to hit it up one more time. Please follow us on Twitter at @theoverlay_pod and be sure to review and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Brandon, what's your tagline?
I got nothing. Indiana's open now, guys. So
Indiana's open.
Indiana's open. Oh. Illinois is next.
Also, happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
Cinco de Mayo today.
Welcome back, USA. That's my new tagline.
Welcome back, USA. That could be the next politician's tagline. Welcome back, USA. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Bye.